I'd like to first congratulate Tim on winning a bet this morning. Right before he went on, we all bet him that he couldn't fit Charles Dickens and the artist formerly known as Prince into his introductory remarks. But he was supposed to include Screech by Saved by the Bell, but two out of three ain't bad. So good job with that. So Dickens, we'll go with that. The best of times, the worst of times. 2013. Really was a demonstration of how fundamentally sound and the energy policy called the Renewable Fuel Standard was and how well it could work. I'm talking about biodiesel and renewable diesel and the biomass-based diesel's role in that as the first fully commercialized advanced biofuel. So in 2012, the biodiesel industry did just over 1 billion gallons, and in 2013, did just under 2 billion gallons. So by July of 2013, we were at about an annualized monthly run rate at about 2.1 billion gallons, which is equivalent to about 5% of the on-road diesel fuel supply. So we had actually hit our 10-year vision of 5x15 2 years early. So the industry was going. There was investment, jobs being created. All of the benefits that those of us in the biofuel sector that advocated for the RFS said there would be. None of the disbenefits were happening. In fact, during that time that we were ramping up 1.8 billion annualized, 1.9, setting monthly record production volumes every single month, feedstock prices were actually moderating. Feedstock prices were actually coming down. So none of the sort of negative market impacts were occurring. All of the positive market impacts were occurring. And then we had this very devastating leaked proposed draft come out of the EPA, and if it was designed to have a chilling effect on the markets and a chilling effect on the RIN values, then it achieved its purpose, because RIN values began to drop at that point. Then we were hit with the double whammy of the lapse of the biodiesel blender's tax credit. And so this has been a very tough year. It's been especially tough on the small and medium-sized producers, many of whom have been faced with impossible business decisions of either continuing to run at a loss or stop running and be... you know, at risk of losing all of your employees, losing your customers, losing your suppliers. So these have been just almost impossible business decisions. Now, the larger, medium-sized producers have continued to go. So we've seen volumes sort of maintain some of similar levels, but it has really been at the larger folks with the larger balance sheets that have been able to maintain that and keep that going. Real quickly, in talking with Tim last week, I asked him whether the folks kind of understood sort of how those numbers worked on the advanced biofuel side. And it, because of the nested nature of the various buckets in the advanced biofuel side, it's very difficult to sort of explain that in a Reader's Digest version. Yeah. But I'm going to try to give it a shot real quick. So in the first page of this proposed rule, the EPA said that the reason for the cutbacks on the volumes of the RFS were all based on trying to address the ethanol blend wall. And so, therefore, that was the first page, the first paragraph, the first sentence of the proposed rule was to address the ethanol blend wall. Well, so in their proposal, they ended up cutting ethanol's volumes by about 6% from their previous year's production. However, biodiesel, biodiesel was really filling all of the advanced biofuel volumes. The biomass-based diesel volume was set at 1.28. We did 1.8 billion gallons. They proposed capping us at 1.28 and lowering the total advance so there was no headspace to fill over. So once you figure that there was about 300 million gallons of excess production carried forward into this current year, 1.28 becomes less than a billion gallons. So if you followed all of that, we went from almost 2 billion gallons to about a billion gallons. And it's the irony of it is that biodiesel actually helps alleviate the ethanol blend wall because it pulls more of the volumes out of the gasoline supply and over into the diesel fuel supply. So in that total advanced bucket, you have two primarily commercialized industries. You've got and more coming on, but in terms of the ones that are here now, you've got biodiesel, renewable diesel, and you've got imported Brazilian sugarcane ethanol, which is ethanol, which adds to the blend wall constraints. And so when biodiesel displaces that imported Brazilian sugarcane ethanol, we actually help alleviate the ethanol blend wall issue. So think about this irony. EPA says that the whole proposal was aimed at addressing the ethanol blend wall issue, and in order to do that, they cut ethanol by 6% from previous year production, and they cut biodiesel, which helps alleviate the ethanol blend wall, by 50%. So it was quite nonsensical, and we're hopeful and cautiously optimistic that they will ultimately get it right, even though it will have taken them a year to do so. We're still calling on them to get it right. So I look forward to answering questions about any of that. If you didn't follow all those numbers, or I'll be glad to talk to you afterwards. I too want to end on a positive note. I mean, here in Minnesota, we have in our midst one of the great leaders and pioneers of biofuels from the Minnesota Biodiesel Council and the Minnesota Soybean Growers. Mike Youngerberg is here. Mike, will you just raise your hand? Mike is a pioneer that really got the first statewide biofuels mandate here, biodiesel mandate here in Minnesota, and B2 back in 2003, and that was really, he championed that really helped lead the Minnesota soybean growers to get that pushed through. That has been a success, not without some speed bumps, but nothing comes without speed bumps. And this year was another illustration of the success of that program with the successful implementation of B10 here in Minnesota. So, Mike, thank you, and thanks for being here.